what we figured was we're going to need to take the virtues of the approach that we have, which is our engagement, our civic engagement, and the economic virtues of the fee and dividend approach, and translate them into some principles and some engagement opportunities that would give us a way to influence the outcome. So we put out something called the Pathway to Paris Core Principles. And what it did was it boiled down what we know to be positive impacts from the fee and dividend plan into five principles that you could apply to any kind of carbon price, and that you could then use to make other carbon pricing strategies smarter, better, more effective, more transparent, more legitimate. This led to some really close conversation with carbon pricing experts in the international community, the World Bank and elsewhere. What ended up happening was thinking about upstream pricing, pricing at the source, made its way into the consciousness of these intergovernmental bodies. Thinking about the value of regular dividends to the public made its way into the thinking of these bodies. The need for a steadily increasing or intensifying price made its way into their thinking. And in October of 2014, just a month after we started, not even a month after we started the Pathway to Paris project, this process of putting together a coalition of organizations to work for these kind of principles on carbon pricing got started. We decided we needed to have dialogue with people. Let's have dialogue with citizens around the world. Let's have dialogue with other organizations. And so we had a series of Pathway to Paris local working sessions. And the idea of a working session was where you've got a group of people sitting around a table doing real work, figuring out policy details. You could do that in any place, anywhere in the world, and bring the ideas of the people in that room into this intergovernmental space. So out of those local working sessions, we actually learned quite a lot about how people would translate a global policy into their own local needs and their own local priorities. Those discussions tended to center around certain issues. So, of course, carbon pricing was a common issue because we started out with that issue. But water was also a common issue, and engagement was a common issue, and the opportunity to do clean development was an issue. The effect of industrial policy on oceans. So what we did was we said, let's take the commonalities among these different discussions happening in different places around the country and around the world and turn them into persistent discussions. We call them work streams. And those work streams are basically ongoing venues for discussion of that topic. So the carbon pricing work stream was our most robust and effective. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes, but we also have work streams on adaptation and resilience, public participation, human health, oceans, the polar regions, the sustainable development goals and their connections to the climate issue, the tracking of the legal text of the Paris Agreement and after, the nationally determined contributions. Each of these different work streams plays a role in letting people around the world actually make contact with global decision makers. The carbon pricing principles that we put into that white paper in September of 2014 ended up becoming part of the principles that were discussed by the group of people convening from around the world who created the Carbon Pricing Leadership Coalition. And in September of 2015, we were there at the table when the Carbon Pricing Leadership Coalition design was decided. And we got to be there in Paris as well when the Carbon Pricing Leadership Coalition officially became a global policymaking body. What's so important about this process is that we now have global institutions for the first time in September of this year saying we support upstream pricing as a sign that a carbon pricing policy can be successful. We support fiscal dividends as a sign that a carbon pricing policy can be successful. Other principles that were supported in this document that was put out by the World Bank and the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, with advice from the International Monetary Fund and the CPLC partners, including Citizens Climate Lobby. Some of the other principles were that you have to have alignment of policy objectives. So you can't say that you're reducing emissions on the one hand and donate $1 billion to the oil industry on the other. You have to have coherence between these policies, move in the same direction with all your policies. You have to have transparency. You can't have a situation where you're making claims about your climate action, making claims about your carbon policy, but actually behind the scenes, you're doing something different from what you say in public. You have to have transparency. You have to have environmental effectiveness. You have to have integrity in your policy where the environmental aims are actually also the functionality of your policy. All of these things made their way into the principles put out by the World Bank. And for us, one of the best signs that we had something that was very much like what we wanted in terms of the new global thinking was not just transparency, not just alignment, not just fiscal dividends and upstream pricing and fees, but also steady rise or steady intensification of the price. So this was something that emerged from a process of dialogue and from bringing different people from different perspectives into a discussion. So that we could say, listen, you don't have to be a fee and dividend person, but learn why we think that these principles should be part of all carbon pricing policies. What that did was it allowed for the creation of all kinds of new alliances, new friendships. It allowed for people who want emissions trading to be on the same team as people who want fee and dividend, not because we want each other's policies. We'll still say may the best man win, but be on the same team in the sense that when the policies are implemented, what we want is something that's true, genuine, reliable, legitimate, not something that's, you know, a shell game moving money around, but not really solving the climate crisis. Those carbon pricing principles made their way into the Paris Agreement, and I'll say a little bit more about that in a few minutes. We had a team of people in Paris who not only were there to, you know, think about these policies and carry forward our message, but who were there to actually do that on behalf of others. We set ourselves a challenge that we initially called Paris 24/7 of setting up a round-the-clock news network run by citizens. And our volunteers turned that into Citizens Voice. Paul Thompson, who's our co-regional coordinator for the Great North Wind Country, based here in Minnesota, interviewing Anaïs Radeli, who was one of our first Pathway to Paris volunteers. She was our first global strategy intern, and she was one of the architects of our whole logistics team process, planning for the Paris conference. And what our Citizens Voice team did was they created almost 200 videos interviewing people, talking to people who were going to influence the process. And I just like to see if Claire Richet is on with us. If you could unmute yourself, Claire, on Fuse, just hit the microphone, and on the phone, just hit *1 and give us a sort of, you know, 60-second count of what your experience was and why you felt this was something that was worth doing.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Citizens Voice was just a lot of fun because there are so many interesting people that come to COP21 and so many interesting people that have traveled the globe. It's really, you feel like that you're a global citizen because there are people all around you that come to the COP. So it's really empowering to hear about all these different stories that people are doing to help fight climate change around the world. And it's just really cool hearing their stories and helping broadcast their stories.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Claire. And, you know, I have to say, I had this amazing experience working with our volunteers in Paris. We had actually 50 people sign up for our Paris team. Not everybody met everybody, but I got to meet everybody. And it was amazing to watch how people work together, sometimes in the same place and sometimes separately. And one of the things that the Citizens Voice team succeeded in doing was getting CCL to be heard about in all these corners of the conference and to promote the idea of citizen engagement and citizen-driven advocacy as something other than, you know, making demands from the outside, constructive engagement, real in-depth conversations about policy and process. And I just want to congratulate the Citizens Voice team on the work they did, because it really made people think. And it actually, a number of people who've been doing this kind of reporting as, you know, professionals being paid by the UN or being paid by other institutions to do it, said that they couldn't believe the amount of content that was created by this team of volunteers. And if you want to see what happened at COP21, just go to citizensvoice.tv and you can make your way into the Citizens Voice universe there. You can see highlights and compilations and amazing interviews by Kaya and Paul and Mindy and Claire and Lachlan and everyone else who went there to do this work.